For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning, Bodhisattvas.
Good morning.
In person, in the cloud. Wonderful to sit together, one practice body, across time and space, if that even exists, who knows. I wanted to welcome Michael and then back and back for more. And I'm not sure if I've met John, but hello to you and Ben. Hi, Ben. And I wonder if Angela is Angie. Yeah. If so, hello to all. So what a precious opportunity and occurrence to sit together practicing peace and embodying a way to meet the world with openness, softness, and flexibility. You might be thinking, that's not my zazen. But even if your zazen this morning was not quite peaceful, not quite soft, or open or flexible, don't worry about it. Don't worry about your zazen. Just sit and return to the silence and stillness that is open to everything, which might not be in your awareness. So today I've been thinking about, this morning, I woke up thinking about zazen. What is happening when we sit? And how does this relate to our life and the world? And what occurred to me is that we are creating a body. We're actually rewiring our body. We're creating a body of compassion. Maybe creating, maybe we're returning to it. I'm not quite sure. We can all explore that together. And then, you know, we get up off the cushion and move through life. Hopefully with our feet or our wheels on the ground and greet everyone and everything. Hello. I had a visitor named Rob Lyons this weekend, straight from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. He actually came from Berkeley, California to witness that event and to be there and commune with people. And it was really wonderful. I'd never met this person before. And he stayed in Milwaukee for the Republican National Convention and then spent the night here with us at the temple on the second floor. And what the message he brought was, I want to just greet everyone. He's a Buddhist practitioner and engaged Buddhist. That means he's sort of focused on manifesting Buddhism in, let's say, social political situations. But it was really great to be around someone who was really open. He said, you know, yeah, I'll talk to anybody. Let the Sangha know I'm here. And Eve showed up with a friend. And he'll be back for return engagement in August. So greeting everyone with warm-hearted compassion and warm-hearted silence and stillness, even if we're speaking. People feel it. And it was interesting in my conversations with Rob, he was like, wow, I met this person who had a superpower just to be inviting to everyone. Just randomly met her. And he's like, I wish I could be like that. And I thought, Ron was like one of the most friendly, engaged, or Rob was one of the most friendly, engaging people I've met who could converse about anything and really show interest in people. And I thought, yeah, this guy's like a super communicator, and he even feels like, oh, I'm not quite even up to this level of this woman he met in Milwaukee. He's like, yeah, she was like, walked by a gas station and went to everybody in their car and it's like, hey, can I give you a flyer to get out the vote? How are you doing? You know, and everybody was so receptive. You know, usually we shy away from people. So we uncover the caring and attentive voice of Zazen, the voice of silence and stillness. Each time we sit and return to our breath and our bodies. Some ways it's nothing special, but it's easy to forget. And I had the thought that, yeah, this voice of Zazen, this comes out of the body of compassion, you know, can look like kind words, our great medieval Japanese founder of our school of Zazen, of our family style, Dogen, said something like, loving speech means, first of all, to arouse compassionate mind when meeting with living beings, and to offer caring and loving words, offering words of care and concern for all beings. And how that manifests is a lifetime of study, I think. It was great to have this person, Rob Lyons, who was studying that. I'm like, yeah, I'll study that with you too for a while. So that's kind of what we did in our conversations together. So I feel very, very fortunate that we have this rich treasure of ancient and contemporary Buddhist teaching to nourish and support us during this particular moment, during any moment, but this particular one is one that maybe challenges some of us to turn away from or aggress or space out. But to be present with all of this means that we face this tidal wave of distress. And it can be easy to forget to arouse the compassionate mind when meeting with living beings and to offer caring and loving words and offering care and concern for all beings. It was very interesting in my discussions with Rob Lyons. I not once heard him utter a divisive word. I caught myself about to utter it. But I was with someone who kind of helped me, like, oh, wait a minute. You don't have to do that. There's another way. And this is our practice. It's another way. It might seem impossible. Yet, I don't think anyone would be here on a Sunday morning, a beautiful morning in Chicago, and know what it's like anywhere else. And sit quietly and put in all this effort if every single person didn't know there's another way that feels right, that feels congruent with this deep, compassionately responsive knowing. That wishes to connect to this compassionate mind. And just as a sidebar, just to remind everyone, now, we could quibble in the Buddhist philosophical literature, which is so vast and wonderful, about definitions. But I'll just say, for me, living beings includes those we like, those we don't like, our families, cicadas, the cardinal chirping, or robins chirping, the great Mother Earth with her oceans full of crumbling coral reefs and beautiful whales, and the endless sky. Everything is really, truly alive from at least my perspective. I don't want to impose that upon you, but consider that. Consider that. I think it is this compassionate heart and mind and body that actually bring us to Zazen, that calls us to the cushion and invites us to create this body of compassion. And there's a process that unfolds in Zazen. You know, sometimes it's like you're doing nothing in Zazen. Zazen is good for nothing. Don't try to get anything. Don't do anything. Don't move. You know, it's a lot of admonitions because it's dangerous. You know, you can sort of like, well, this is Zazen. This is a nice new toy and I'm going to feel great, or I'm going to get something. But something does happen. There's a process. We don't necessarily control it, or we don't get something, but this process is some kind of movement, some kind of shift. Sekiro Kisen, who somebody may have heard of, Sherto, the name Kisen means something like rare shift or rare transformation. So maybe they knew something like Sekiro Kisen 600, 700, 800 in this common era in China, someplace on a mountain. It was a rare shift. And this is, we're making this rare shift in our practice here in Zazen. Or something is making it, the universe or our Zazen hearts. And this shift is embodied. So it's some movement or shift from separateness to connection or interconnection, from conditional love to unconditional, unconditioned love, from control to cooperation, from fear to confidence even. You know, ooh, confidence. Bodhisattvas are confidence. People who care about the world actually trust in themselves and the world to be able to relate. Don't turn back. This is what I mean by creating a body of compassion. Maybe liberate might be a better word than create. Liberating the body that we already have, that wants, that knows, that seeks, that moves towards, shifts towards caring and openness and flexibility. So when we sit, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but, you know, sometimes it's painful. You know, our legs hurt, our backs hurt, our hearts hurt, our psyches cry out. Because we see, we begin to see just a little bit how our life experiences, in parentheses, some people call this trauma, but I'd say, I don't want to get hung up on that word, but just how our experiences in our lives, in our development, and the conditioning close off and imprison the body of compassion. Lock it up. And there's a kind of grieving process when we see this. You know, how fears and hurts and biases and ego-driven desires might have deeply obscured our tenderness and our caring and constrained these bodies of compassion. So if your zazen doesn't feel so peaceful, you might be in that process of just like, wow, you know, happens to me. I'll be like, oh, my tone of voice wasn't quite right the other day, or 10 minutes ago, or even right now, maybe. I missed something. My body of compassion was constrained or was held back. Quote Dogen again. Dogen says, it is most difficult to change the rigid, habitual mind of sentient beings. Still, from the first, you should aspire to work with the narrow and biased mind. Like the change involved in planting a treasure seed that will grow until one has completely gained the way. Until you become this treasure tree. This is the body of compassion, this treasure tree. But, you know, you have to prepare a ground. You have to locate the correct seed and conditions. And sometimes you don't know what's going to happen. But this planting the treasure seed is working with the narrow and biased mind. I don't know if anybody's ever taken an implicit bias test. Ever seen them? Yeah. You saw them maybe from education, right, Bo?
Yeah, I've had to take them, yeah.
Yeah, like at Harvard or Yale or someplace they have them online, like some fancy place, right? They're doing research on different biases. And I'm like, ah, I'll see. I'm not biased about that. Then it comes up. You are biased. If you answer all these questions, you know, even if I'm trying to answer them in the right direction, I can't get rid of my biases. So I'm thrilled when I found this because I'm like, every once in a while I go back and there's all sorts of things that they check your bias on, you know, racism, homophobia, but I mean, it goes on and on. And, you know, our biases are just like a treasure trove. So we plant the seeds and we care for them and we clarify how I'm stuck or trapped. You know, like I'm just envisioning our bodies wrapped in chains and locks of our biases, kind of like a magician or Houdini, you know, like those escape artists. So just wrapped in that. And if you struggle, usually there's no way out. But like a magician covered in these locks and chains, you know, somehow they slip free and the locks and chains aren't even broken or disturbed. They just set them aside. So this is what we do in Zazen. We learn this kind of magic of creating or liberating the body of compassion that responds to these traps and snares of culture, of our conditioning, of our reactivity, habits, limitations, and we learn how to meet that with intelligence, softness, and gentle care. And this frees us, but it also cares for these traps and snares. You know, they're just gently set aside. They're there if you need them. You know, sometimes maybe anger is useful. Even our pain of hurts that we might have suffered or hurts that we imposed on others, still those don't get just discarded. They're just set aside and cared for. I think I do have just a few more minutes to say a little bit more. There are many, many examples of how our meditation practice works to unfold and liberate this compassion body and how to plant the treasure seed. And last week I offered a prayer, words. So not just zazen, but words help us too. Our vows, you know, the impossible vows that we sing at the end of Dharma talks and many meetings. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. So I'm going to just offer this prayer again. Some of you may have heard it, and I'm sorry to repeat. And I'm even more apologetic that I'm probably going to repeat this a few more times in the next coming month, 2 months, 3 months, because I believe it's a prayer for our time and our moment. So if you can just close your eyes, if that's comfortable for you. If not, find a comfortable position, you know, where you can receive these words written by someone named Maile Scott, a bodhisattva now deceased, also from Berkeley and in the same lineage as this person, Rob Lyons, that I mentioned earlier. Soften the senses, and listen to the gentle, clear words of Maile. May I be well, loving, and peaceful. May all beings be well, loving, and peaceful. May I be at ease in my body, feeling the ground beneath my feet, beneath my seat, letting my back be long and straight, enjoying breath as it arises and falls and rises. May I be at ease in my body. May I know and be intimate with my body-mind, whatever it is feeling, its mood, calm or agitated, tired or energetic, irritated or friendly, breathing in and out, breathing in and exhaling fully, aware moment by moment of the risings and passings. May I be attentive and gentle towards my own discomfort and suffering. May I be attentive and grateful for my own joy and being. May I move towards others freely and with openness. May I receive others with sympathy and understanding. May I move towards others suffering with peaceful and attentive confidence. May I recall the Bodhisattva of compassion, her 1,000 hands, her instant readiness for action, each hand with an eye in it, the instinctive knowing what to do. May I continually cultivate the ground of peace for myself and others and persist, mindful and dedicated to this work, independent of results. May I know that my peace and the world's peace are not separate, that our peace in the world is a result of our work for justice. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. So enjoy the breathing that connects us to everything and everyone, and allow your attention to return to this moment. You can open your eyes and relax your body. You know, sometimes it can seem impossible to be at ease. At least it does for me, to be at ease in my body, to feel the ground beneath my feet and my seat. You know, we do walking meditation. Do you feel the contact with the ground? Are you caught someplace else? To let my back be straight and long as a spine. To enjoy the breath as it rises and falls and rises. There can be resistance, you know, to knowing and being intimate with the body and mind. So this is what we study. We study how to unlock that resistance and set it aside so we can be intimate with whatever we're feeling. Tired or energetic, irritable, or engaging. And this prayer encourages us to discover how to be attentive and gentle towards discomfort and suffering, and how to meet the world's problems in this way, with this body of compassionate response and learning to plant the treasure seed. These words are sort of a little treasure seed tool or fertilizer. And as Maile notes in this metta prayer, practicing this way together, we know what to do. Our liberated Zazen hearts and bodies respond with instant readiness for action, with this instinctive knowing. So, you can always find, you know, if you Google Maile Scott Metta Prayer, you can find this. Some things I quoted, you can Google Dogen. Bodhisattva methods of guidance, or four Bodhisattva embracing activities. If you Google Houdini, you can probably find out about a magician who allows the chains to fall away. But only you can live your life and do this practice. So thank you all very much for your kind attention and great practice together. And I think we have a little time to chat before we move on to all the other events we have today. Anybody like to offer anything? Eve.
Now for a question. When you were talking about setting things aside, can you say more about the difference between, you know, like for instance, resentment, between like setting that aside and then and trying to get rid of it?
Yep. Any questions about that?
Yeah, which is that?
Good question. So you know it in the body. Maybe I even threw that too nicely, but I'm just not one of those Zen people who likes to smash down their stick and yell at people. But there's a difference in taking care of things and holding them close. So maybe we have to set some things down kind of far away because they're just too radioactive. But we learn to come closer. But you know it in your body. When you meet someone and you're like, I really want to be open to this person, but I just can't. You know, you notice that in the body. And when it's set aside, you just let it rest. Maybe setting aside is a little close, but letting it rest. You know.
But yeah, maybe you can distance.
Yeah. And also I noticed you use both hands. So instead of just like carelessly.
Yeah.
So you see that in the body. Mm-hmm. You can't see this online, but Eva's doing a wonderful performance of like that or that. So yeah. I think you answered your question well. But there is a difference. Well, Houdini Bodhisattvas, maybe that's enough for now. We could move on with this program. And we'll have, after this event, after we chant some vows and do some things, we'll have some announcements. I'm going to go up during the vows and do some vows, so I'm going to say goodbye to the online people. And then in person, we'll have announcements, tea, work and tea, I guess. Thank you all very much. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are numberless, we abound to freedom. Delusions are inexhaustible, we abound to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to freedom. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, we vow to realize it.